Hi, everyone. This is Coach Fab for Casinos USA, and welcome to our April 5th podcast, episode 38, America's Biggest Gambling Scam. Hey, and I want to say hello to our digital audience. It's a big one today. Hi, guys. Did you enjoy the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments as much as I did? Oh, I know you did. What a passion we have for this college basketball, men and women's, at this time of the year. But how do you know that the games you watched weren't fixed? How do you know that? Oh, you're going to tell me, hey, it can't happen here? Well, let's talk about point shaving and how point shaving in basketball has been the biggest gambling scam in American history. Arguably, it's still going on, but the people just haven't been caught. This gambling scam is associated with high-quality basketball teams, and it involves point shaving. And what's point shaving? Well, it's not where you pick a team to win or lose. It's where you pick a team to win by a certain number of points. Usually these kind of schemes involve college athletes, and they can be swayed by gifts of, I don't know, a few thousand dollars, maybe more. In most cases, they're convinced, hey, they're not doing anything wrong. They're not throwing the games. Their opponents aren't going to win. They're just going to manipulate the score. So if they're favored to win by 14 points, what's it matter if the team wins only by 10? And we can argue that basketball has been the most common target for point shaving schemes because points are scored frequently and it takes only a small number of players to impact the game. Let's start with the City College of New York in 1950-51. In 1950, the best team in college basketball wasn't Duke or North Carolina, but it was CCNY, the City College of New York. And you know, you're thinking, well, I never even heard of them. Well, because of what happened on their basketball program, the sport was absolutely diminished to the point where they're just a distant memory. Three of their star players were arrested for manipulating point spreads during this historic season. Eventually, dozens more were brought up on charges, and organized crime was behind it, of course. This group of athletes at NCCNY affected the scores of 86 games. 86 games. It permanently removed the school as a national basketball power. And some sports pundits argue, it had a detrimental effect on New York City college basketball for decades. But hey, we don't have to go back to 1950 or 51. Let's talk about Boston College in 1978. The Boston College point shaving scandal is notable for its ties to monster turned FBI informant Henry Hill. The movie's Goodfellas is based on part of his life. Brothers Rocco and Tony Perla were two small time gamblers, and they were friends with Rick Kuhn, a player on the Boston College basketball team. The Perla brothers approached Kuhn about shaving points, and he agreed to participate and recruit additional players. Through a friend, the Perla brothers were introduced to Henry Hill, who agreed to help set up a betting syndicate that would allow them to spread out their bets over many different bookmakers, so that way it didn't arouse suspicion. The scheme worked for several games until a matchup with Holy Cross. When the BC players failed to lose by more than a point spread, the mob backers pulled out and the scheme was discontinued. Truthfully, in all likelihood, this would have never been uncovered if not for Henry Hill volunteering the details when he became an FBI informant in 1980. Oh, I got one even closer in time. Let's go to Arizona State in 1994. Campus bookie Benny Sillman. The ASU point shaving scandal involved basketball players Stephen Smith and Isaac Burton. And Smith, who was still ASU's fifth all-time leading scorer, was paid $80,000 to affect the point spread of four games. Smith, so talented, realized it would be difficult to do alone, so he enlisted his teammate Burton and paid him a total of $4,300 over two games. However, the Vegas casinos that Silman and his associates were used to placing their bets, they sniffed the scheme out. Well, how do you figure that out? When all of a sudden all these bets come in that normally don't come in for large amounts of money, they got wise to the game and they tipped off the FBI. How did this one turn out? Well, friends of Smith began talking and the whole plot unraveled. Silman served almost 4 years in federal prison, while Smith served 1 year and Burton 2 months. And of course, the National Basketball Association, the NBA, just passed on the talented, talented Smith because he had ties and participated in college point shaving. Well, how about this national renowned college, Northwestern University, in 1995? And I think this detail proves that all universities are potential targets for point shaving schemes. Even one with stellar academic reputations like Northwestern. Northwestern at the time was coming off a 5-22 season and were heavy underdogs for most of their games the next season. So this is one case where they weren't a talented team and they weren't a team that was expected to win. But they made sure a couple of the players who were crooked made sure they lost games by more than the point spread. This scheme worked for the first two games. However, in the third game, their opponent was Michigan, almost a 30-point favorite. And no matter how poorly Northwestern tried to play these two players, they were unable to lose by more than 30 points. And the gamblers took big hits. The scheme began to unravel after that, and the FBI started investigating. Pendergast would end up serving 2 months in prison, while Lee and another Northwestern player each served a month. Ouch. Hey, and this point shaving, this idea of losing by or winning by fewer points than what the sports books around the country have your team as, is not limited to basketball. 2007, University of Toledo. Adam Cuomo, a running back on the University of Toledo football team, who was on the team 1999 to 2003, had a relationship with two Detroit area gamblers, and he agreed to work for them. Cuomo recruited other players and also sought to expand it. Players on both the Toledo and football and basketball teams pled guilty to conspiracy charges, including another former running back who admitted he accepted $500 to fumble in a 2005 bowl game. Oh. Where does it end? Where does it end? And, you know, you think about, well, how could you throw a game in football? Well, obviously the quarterback could. But couldn't defensive backs or running backs who fumble? And if you are a high school basketball player, you know you're guarding a great shooter. You can just step back a little bit and give them space. It looks like you're covering them and you're trying your best. But maybe those 3 or 4 inches that you kind of give them enables them to shoot and score. That's how it works, my friend. It's a big, big scam. Still, we congratulate Villanova. What a great basketball team. What a great offense and defensive team. And I'm not trying to diminish their accomplishments one bit. How about my Fighting Irish ladies? I must have watched them at least a dozen times on TV this year. What a fantastic championship team they are. But it just breaks your heart when you think about how this point-shaving scandal isn't that far in the past. And, you know, we don't know that it's completely gone away. And more states are trying to legalize sports betting and create their own sports bets in their own state casinos. casinos, and those casinos are putting pressure on legislatures to legalize sports books. And even though that hasn't happened yet, the case is in the Supreme Court. So any day now it might be that your home state, like mine, Pennsylvania, might make it completely legal for me to bet on games. And when there's more and more people betting on games, there's more and more pressure put on players to be tempted to take bribes from the illegal aspects in our society and try to point shave games. And you know, they're thinking, I'm not really hurting my team. But of course, once you're sucked in and the mob has you by the throat like that, who's to say how it will turn out? I think this scam, point shaving, is the biggest scam in American gambling history. But I'm going to tell you one that I thought was pretty neat. Oh, I don't want anyone to fall for it. But let's just come right back and let me tell you a story that I know you'll share with others. But first, for those of you who want to know where I researched this, it's all over the internet and history. But consider articles by Scott Killinger, a famous writer, a history of infamous point-shaving scandals. Scott Killinger, K-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R. And he'll give you the evidence in his articles that I referred to today. But hey, what about this thing that's very curious and interesting? All right, here's how it would work. This is from a different time, so I'm going to modernize my example and go back to tell you how it worked originally. But let's say you get an email, and the email says, the Chicago Bears are going to win Sunday's game with the Green Bay Packers. And you're thinking, fat chance. Just ignore it. Well, Sunday comes and goes, and my goodness, the Chicago Bears have pulled up. They've pulled the greatest upset of the early football season. And it goes on and on. Pick a professional sport. Another email comes to you, and this time it says the Cleveland Browns will beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you think, are you crazy? And Sunday comes and goes. And in the same season, it seems like the greatest upset of the decade has taken place as Cleveland pounds the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this goes on for the third week and the fourth week. And maybe it picks a hockey game. And for 5 weeks, you've received this mysterious email that predicts a win that you think, how could they know? How could they know that? And why wasn't I betting it? All right. The next week, nothing comes. No email. And you're thinking, doggone it, what happened? But suddenly, a week and a half after you haven't received an email, you get an email. And it says, didn't we pick 5 games for you? Didn't we tell you what was happening? Those were major upsets. We know what's going to happen. Just believe in us. And we will pick, and we'll just name a game, for $300. We guarantee we'll give you a winner. Well, you don't know how many people receive that. But you know, you think, what the hell? I'm going to go with it. And you tell your friends you made a $300 bet and was on a particular team, and you're saying, you're crazy, they don't have a chance. And suddenly, Sunday comes and goes, and you win. You win. Now, they predicted 6 straight games for you, and you only paid $300. And, of course, a week later, they tell you for $600, they'll give you another winner. And Sunday comes and goes, and you win. And, of course, the price keeps going up. How did they do it? How did they do it? Can you figure it out? All right, I'm coming back, and this is just brilliant. People cheat, don't they? People scheme, don't they? This is just brilliant how they predicted the future, and they can do it and do it and do it and do it and do it until it has to end. But I'll explain the details. We'll be right back. This is how the scheme worked. Let's say you have 100,000 email addresses, and they're from anywhere in the country, not one place, but spread out all through the 50 states, coast to coast. And 50,000 people are told that team A will win on Sunday, and 50,000 people are told that team B will win on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Well, either A or B will win. So you have 50,000 people that received an email that was correct. And of course, the number's divided again. So for week two, 25,000 people get an email that predicts team A will win, and vice versa, 25,000 people get an email that says team B will win, and 12,500 people have received two emails in 2 weeks, and it's correct. And they divide it again, and they divide it again, and they divided it again. And after the fifth week, they stop for a week, kind of like, let it sink in. Now, you know, somebody lost the first week. They're saying, oh, so, of course, the losers never get any more emails. And what are the odds that somebody would know somebody else that got that email? Because there's millions and millions of email addresses. And so you keep dividing them up, and the price keeps going up. And only a small percentage of those who get the right answers bet anyway, but some do. And this costs you nothing, because email addresses probably are almost free, you know? What's 100,000 email addresses? This scam took place in the 1920s, and the people that did it used penny postcards. There wasn't internet or social media there. And actually, that probably made it better, because people couldn't call into sports shows or put comments in social media. And it went down all the way. And even though it was so expensive, you know, by 1920 standards, it came down to two people still left. And they were paying incredible amounts of money for the last several cards. Well, eventually, one person who played this scam won it all. You know? He won it all. But I'm sure they got him. When he was the only one left, or she was the only one left, they got a postcard too. And it was probably wrong, because they couldn't use both. But you know, when I heard that this scam was effective, and I thought, well, how could they predict the future? And I was thinking, like, did they bribe players, etc.? No. They didn't do anything. They just sent out A wins or B wins. And half either A or B is going to win. And they do it again, and they do it again, and they do it again. And they always have a population that's only received correct answers. Because when people receive losing answers, you never hear from the senders again. Oh, my goodness. Isn't that creative? Isn't that creative? And that's the one that I think, unfortunately, I think point shaving could still work. I still think players could be bribed. And the rise of sports books, if the Supreme Court legalizes them, is going to put more and more pressure on players not to accept bribes. But this thing about sending out emails, or back in the old days, the postcards, wow. What a brilliant scam, cheating and illegal as it is. Well, feel free to tell that story. The genesis of that story can be found on the internet. It's in New York police records, and it's mail fraud. It was mail fraud at the time. And our buddy J. Edgar Hoover with his FBI agents broke that one. Oh, my. Unbelievable, strange but true, but true indeed. All right, we'll be right back after a short break. And we're moving on to your favorite table game, craps. Okay, so I want to talk about laying the 4 and 10. Lay the 4 and 10, the Coach Fab way. And we want to do that on the come out roll. We're looking for a string of sevens. And when I think about making lay bets, and if you're a pass line player, this is like one step you can take into the dark side of craps. You know, so you're not going to play the don't pass, but you're going to lay the 4 and 10 on the come out roll. And then, of course, all lay bets can be lifted, and you even get your commission back. So what's it cost to lay the 4 and 10, and what would you get? Well, the minimum lay amount in 99.9% of the casinos where I've played is $40. So if you lay the 4 for 40, they'll charge you a dollar commission. It's different in every casino. Some casinos you pay that up front, and in some casinos you pay it if the bet hits. I think more often than not it's up front, but I've run into the exception. All right, so you lay the 4 and 10 for $40 each. So you really have $82 that's involved here. And what would happen is if somebody rolls a 7 on the come out, we're doing this before the come out, you would win half that. You would win $20 on the 4 and $20 from laying the 10. So what are you afraid of? Well, that's a $40 win. That's nothing to do with the pass line or hopping to 7 or anything else like that. Okay, the first thing you're afraid of is that somebody's going to throw a 4, which means you lose your $41 bet, or someone's going to throw a 10, and you're going to lose that. So if you want to hop the 4 and 10, I'm saying go ahead. If you're thinking, I'm just going to take a chance, I'm not going to say a word. Some people, even though the hot bet has much better odds, some people like to go with the regular hard number bet, but make it work on the come out roll. So they'll limit that hedge to the hard 4 and the hard 10 by, let's say, putting $5 on the four, you know, the hard way 4, and $5 on the hard way 10. And of course, that would hedge that loss of $41, would pay $35, so you wouldn't lose that much. The advantage of doing it that way, or if you want to add a little bit more to it, you know, $6, $7 hard way play, is that it's not a one roll bet. So here's the point. All right, so you lay the 4 and 10, it's the start of a new game, it's a come out roll, and somebody throws a 6. All right, so you got a decision to make. Do you want to take down your hard way bets? If you hop the bets, now that was one, you lost the money because a 6 was rolled. If you hop the 4 and 10 for whatever, $3, $4, you lost it because it's a, you know, a come out roll. Okay, so what do you do with the all day hard way bets? Okay, the next thing is, what do you do with the 4 and 10? Because you can take those down. Were you just playing the come out roll? And the way I play it is I go one roll. So I'm going to be on the pass line as well. So let's say I have $15 on the pass line and I put $20 behind it because the number was a 6. But I got a lot of protection here because I'm going to go one roll, because I tell you what, 7 and out on the first roll just kills me when I'm playing pass line. So if somebody does roll a 7, I'm going to win those lay bets on the 4 and 10. And that would cover my losses and some, you know, from the $15 pass line bet and $20 behind it. I'd obviously win 40, so I'd still make $5 on a 7 out on that first roll. But other times, people just play the lay bets. Or they might take one of the lay bets down. So there's a lot of thinking here. So let me start over again. I want to lay a number. Okay, so to lay a number, you win when that number doesn't come up, but a 7 comes up. You don't have any loss if you just take the number down. You get your commission back too. And the point of laying the 4 and 10, the Coach Fav way, on the come out roll is you want to catch a string of 7s. And you know, I've made this case in talking about my 15-6 strategy and hopping 7s. Every time I play craps, there's you know, for an hour and a half, there's always somebody in a come out that throws 2 or 3 7s. Sometimes it's more than that, which is really sweet. Okay, another way the people lay the 4 and 10 on the come out is if it hits, they up the bet. So they might go, of course, the commission goes up too, but they might go $40, then $60, and then say, I lay it for $100. So if they got three sevens, you know, they come up on those come out rolls, they're whistling Dixie because, you know, they want some money. You know, they got to decide whether they just want to pull out of the game. But if you've never done it before, I think you should do it once in a while. Lay the 4 and 10 on the come out. If you want to hedge it with a hot bet for a couple bucks, that's fine. If you want to hedge it a hard 4, hard 10 all day. And again, if you can take that down later. Now, if a 7 comes up, you're going to lose it, but you're still going to be ahead. So that's all up to you. But those are the things in craps that I do that I think make my approach to the game a little special. Do I do it every time I play? No. And I don't. The point is, I don't do anything every time I play. I kind of like just read the table, get a sense. A lot of it is, I don't know. It's not psychic or anything. It's just a feeling that, you know, I think this is going to be a good come out 7 kind of table, you know. And so if I'm not hopping 7s, then I'm laying numbers. Okay, and again, the advantage of laying the numbers is that I can take those lay bets down and not lose anything. Obviously, if I hop the 7s and they don't come out, you don't win, then you just lost it, you know. So it's all up to you. There's no surefire way, but I think laying the 4 and 10 is a good way, again, to begin to experience the dark side of craps. And maybe if you do that at some point in your life, maybe wear a disguise. You'll actually play the don't bass line. Hey, but don't rush it. Let's just start with those late bets. Okay, we're going to come back with our final segment of the day. Hang on. We'll be right with you. So Casinos USA is about 14 days away from our trip to Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods in Connecticut, two famous tribal casinos. But, you know, we're about a mile or so at a Hyatt Hotel away from Mohegan Sun because when the podcast community began to talk about where this was going to be, the Gambling Palooza, of course, it didn't have a name back then when we were talking about it. It seemed like Mohegan Sun was where it was going to be. And I checked the room rates, and I thought, you know what, we'd get a better deal with our relationship with Hyatt. So because Hyatt was just a mile or so away and they had a 24/7 shuttle on weekends, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. So I know Cousin Vito got involved, and I don't know if he has a better relationship with Foxwoods, but it seems like there's more interest there right now. So I don't know how much we'll be doing at Gamblepalooza, but I understand they're not that far apart and it's not too hard to go to both places. But we thought that would be a good segment to end our podcast today with, and I invited my partner, Janie. We went on TripAdvisor, that's the Green Isle one, and we just pulled trip reports from people who have stayed at either one or the other or both. And so the question is, Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun, what's best? So, Janie, what did you find out from your first one?
All right, well, the first one I have... The writer says that Foxwoods is huge and the layout is confusing. They prefer Mohegan Sun because it's smaller and the decor is really neat. They are certainly close enough to each other that you can stay at one and visit the other, which is what you and I both figured all along.
Yeah.
This person's never stayed at them since they only live an hour and 15 minutes away. They did stay at a bed and breakfast, though, in the next town. So if you're interested in that, there's a bed and breakfast called Captain Grant's.
So they're kind of doing what we're doing, huh?
Yeah, that's true. I don't care that myself for bed and breakfast, so that one doesn't interest me.
The next one I'm reading is Foxwoods is much larger than Mohegan Sun. It's like its own self-contained city. There is more to do at Foxwoods, more gambling, restaurants, hotels, and museums. However, Mohegan Sun, in my opinion, is much nicer in terms of the atmosphere, decor, etc. It does have fewer restaurants and hotel rooms and tables and slots. Not to say it's small by any means, but significantly smaller than Foxwoods. Okay, so that's kind of like a 50-50. All right, so you're going to go down and do this one.
Well, this I don't know. They both of those seem to prefer Mohegan Sun because it is smaller. They're saying Foxwoods is too large. Okay, this next one says, in my opinion, Foxwoods has gone way downhill. The bigger they get, the more they cater to the high rollers. I've been going there since it was a one-building poker bingo hall. I was so excited when they expanded and added the hotel. I used to win there a lot, but find now that it's very hard. The comps used to be better. I'm not a heavy gambler, though I do go there several times a year, so it adds up. I used to get free rooms, free wampum points, free buffets. I got a 50-50 gift certificate for my birthday 3 times. Now I'm lucky if I get a room for $99. Yeah, I'm going to continue a little bit on this one. It says, stay away. They are a ripoff. The service is worse. Rude workers everywhere. Go to the Mohegan Sun. It's prettier, cleaner, and friendlier. And the few times I go there, they comp me much better than Foxwoods. Well, I don't know. So far, it seems to be people like the smaller one better than Mohegan Sun.
I don't like to hear about rude people working at a casino.
I don't either, and I've rarely run into any, but I have.
Okay, it's my turn to do the next one on TripAdvisor. Hey, this person says, I've stayed at both hotels. I have not stayed at the Two Trees Inn at Foxwoods, so I can't comment on that. The rooms at both Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods was very comparable. Nice decor and amenities. They can both be very pricey, and that's what I found, and that's why we're at the Hyatt. But he says in his second paragraph, I love Mohegan Sun. It is very pretty. I just keep walking around. It's very nice decor, where I find Foxwoods dull. I never win at Foxwoods. Well, that's not good.
No.
Haven't had great luck at Mohegan Sun either. But at least I win sometimes. Oh, boy. It is true that Mohegan Sun is smaller, and maybe they do have a few fewer dining choices. However, I've never had a problem dining at Mohegan Sun. And actually, sometimes it's hard to decide where to eat. I've never had their buffet, but I've had Foxwoods, and I wasn't impressed at all. You know what, Janie? This is another one. It's 90% Mohegan Sun.
Yeah. Well, I would say after reading these, there's no comparison.
All right, here you go.
All right, this one says, we prefer, oh, guess who, Mohegan Sun. The parking is much easier. No shuttle bus from a parking lot miles away. Well, I'm not looking forward to that part of it. However, it does get crowded on weekends and holidays. Well, I think most casinos do on the weekends.
Well, I'm telling you what, I'm a big up-head of valet.
There are a bunch of shops to visit when you get tired or go bell up gambling. Enjoy your trip and bring home some moolah. So far, there doesn't seem to be any contest.
Well, I wanted to tell our listeners, we've never been to either casino, but they're both tribal, of course. But we have been to Connecticut. We took one of our promising basketball teams there, and that team went on to win. We went to Lake Waramug?
Lake Waramug in New Milford, Connecticut, yes.
And then we played some great teams that summer camp, and we knew then that we were going to have a great team, and we went on to win a state championship.
Yes, yes.
Triple-A state championship in Pennsylvania. So we have fond memories of Connecticut. But, you know, as much as it is between Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods, for me, and I hope for you, it's a chance to meet these people we've been listening to for a couple of years.
Right. We're going to see them because we've never been to either casino.
Yeah, we've never been.
And we want to look at it. They don't seem to like Foxwood because it's large, but I, on the other hand, have always liked the large ones. You know, just that there's so much there to do. And but we'll see. You and I have both said your favorite casino is the one that you're winning at.
That's right.
So
yeah.
We'll see how that works.
And Casinos USA, we'll be taking two of our friends, Johnny and Monica, and I think they're a little bigger gamblers than we are, so we'll also get their impressions. I don't think they've been either one either.
No, they haven't, no.
All right. So we want to thank our listeners. This is the end of our podcast today. We're not sure when we'll broadcast again in April because we'll be leaving for Mohegan Sun in 14 days. We're going to go a day early and stay in Pennsylvania, you know, maybe like an hour away from the place on Thursday night so that we can be there early on Friday because it's about a 9-hour drive from Pittsburgh, and we thought we'd be just too tired if we just tried to do it all in one day. So we'll be fresh. Looking forward to meeting our podcast listeners at Gamblepalooza and many of the podcasters that we enjoy and respect deeply. Casinos USA, a place where every day is Saturday. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, every day is Saturday.